This is a Collider.com audio interview.
All right, so how you guys doing today?
We're doing great. Good.
Very good.
Been busy, but having fun.
What is it like? When did you guys find out the movie was going to get in, actually?
We found out.
Oh, you should say your names.
Absolutely. So, Chapman Way. And
this is McLean Way.
It's good that you guys don't sound alike.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something. Our sales agents are the Bronx at Submarine, and they're two brothers, and they sound exactly like on the phone. And we sound exactly like on the phone. So we have these conference calls with them, and nobody ever knows who the fuck is speaking. It's become like this bizarre form of Jeopardy where you like buzz yourself in. You'll be like, McLean here, and you start talking. So we're used to it.
But yeah, we submitted a little late, and we found out.
When you say a little late, what does that mean?
We submitted like late October.
Okay.
We had gotten in contact with the festival, so they're aware of the film. And we're waiting on it, and we got them a late rough cut and got the call about 10 days later that we were in. And yeah, I think for every filmmaker, you know, I think athletes dream of you know, sinking the last basket at the end of a basketball game. I think for independent filmmakers, you dream of getting your film to Sundance, because the audiences here are just the most supportive in the world for independent film. Got the call that we were in, just absolutely ecstatic.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when we started this project, this was our first film we've ever made, so you never know where it's going to go. We certainly believed that it was a good story. We felt confident in our abilities to make a good film. But it was a sports film. You know, you never know how people are going to react to sports documentaries, especially in independent film. Part of the reason why I'm so proud about this documentary is because I grew up loving sports, but in high school I got really into filmmaking, and there doesn't seem to be too much overlap in that community between independent filmmaking and sports, and this documentary seems to be a great way to kind of bring those two communities together. But when I got the phone call that we got in, the way I describe it is that there was a lot of exuberant profanity. I was freaking out. I got the phone call from Dave Currier, and he also told us that we were going to be in the doc premiere section, it was also just fantastic news. So it was, like Jeff said, it was almost a dream come true.
We'll get you involved in one sec. Oh, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
I'm definitely curious about, because obviously making a doc, there's money involved. Like, you have to have the money to do this thing.
Right.
How tough was it for you guys to land financing or to have even, like, an initial nest egg?
We completely financed the whole film. My wife produced it in some money. Mac threw in some college money. We had some wedding money that we had. We sold our cars. So this was a completely self-financed project. And we kind of wanted to keep that way. It's such a personal story that we just felt like we probably know this story. We want to tell it a certain way. And I think when you have to take too much money, it becomes more difficult. There's more cooks in the kitchen. And we just felt like, well, let's, you know, our grandfather took a risk making this team. Let's take a risk and go after this.
Fortunately, we actually caught a good break early on. We got really in touch with a lot of granting communities and documentary film granting institutions. And a lot of those are social issue driven, and ours is character driven. Ours is a sports story, and it's entertaining, and it's a little rollicking. And so there weren't too many grants out there for us, because most grants are looking for social issue films. But we found the one that was the Tribeca Film Institute and ESPN Films documentary prize grant that was given to a documentary that strives to change the way people look at sports. And when we read that, we basically thought, you know, this could be our one chance to really go after this and try and submit a really good application. And we were chosen as the inaugural winners of the grant, and that was very helpful as far as...
It allowed it to be the film that it was. If
absolutely.
It wasn't, it still would have been a good film, but a lot less money, you know, spent on score and post-production and color correction and the things that really helped polish the film.
And so the support from the Tribeca Film Institute has just been phenomenal. And they were one of the first believers in the project.
One more question for you guys, and then I'm going to ask you a question. I'm definitely curious about how long was your assembly cut? Was it a lot longer than what you're actually releasing?
Absolutely. First cut ever was 2 hours. And I knew that wasn't like a realistic cut. Like,
but it was good.
I loved it. And then I got it down to about 90 minutes. And then even at the 90-minute stage, I knew that there were some stories that weren't quite firing on all cylinders. And so when we got to the final cut stage, I had a little back and forth with Todd Field, who's the bat boy on the team, and he's an Oscar-nominated filmmaker. And I showed him our kind of last final rough cut. and he was just a great supporter to work with in terms of, you know, giving me some advice, some thoughts, opinions. And the great thing about him was his only intention was to have the best film. You know, sometimes when you're getting notes from people, you don't know if they're trying to make it more commercial, if they're trying to make it more artistic, or if they're trying to, you just don't really know. But the great thing about Todd was his only thing was, like, all of his notes was to make the best possible project. And so that gives you confidence as a filmmaker that you're moving in the right direction and the changes that you're making are on the right path. And it just gave us a big boost here at the end.
And so after that, we got it down to 75.
Yeah.
So, and that's about where it is right now. It's about 75, 76 minutes, which I think is great. I personally like documentaries. I've been a huge fan of documentary films for the last 4 or 5 years. It's basically been my passion in my life. But I do feel that there's a lot of documentaries that suffer because they have too long run times. And I really like where our documentary ended up because it's got a great pace to it and it moves fast and it accelerates. And I think that when you're making a documentary that has on a story that we have, which is an incredibly fun story, it's a great story, it's an inspiring story, there's themes in it that people can resonate with. I think that that kind of consistency 75 minute cut is really great, and we're getting good feedback on it, so it's playing good at home.
I asked the first question I asked of them, and I'm curious for you, is when did you find out the film was going to be in Sundance, and what did it mean to you?
You know, all I knew about this was that one day some time ago I got the word, probably through Jamie, that the guys they wanted to do a documentary on the Mavericks and Bing, and I thought, I've been asked many times about that as a movie. You know, and I'd read scripts from a number of different sources. My agent at the time had heard some of the stories as the years went by. He said, "You know, that's a great story. You should really consider making one of it." And because it was a family thing, I just sort of went, "Yeah, whatever." It was just a story that my dad. It was what my dad did. I was a part of it. It was just a long, long time ago, too, in my mind. It was like, not really. I'm lazy by nature. So you know, I wasn't going to do anything. And I was just really happy to hear that the guys were going to, like, do it as a documentary. I thought, yeah, that's actually really a good idea. Good for them. Whatever. And then about, I don't know, it must have been a year later, they said, okay, they started trying to find the time to sit me down and talk to me. And at that point, I said, oh, I got to regurgitate this stuff, you know? I gotta get this thing going and remember it again, you know. I was starting to remember names and things, and I thought to myself at the time, you know what, that's not my job. Their job is to ask the questions. I'm not making this thing. I got nothing to do with it. I'm just gonna sit there, and when they ask me a question, I'm gonna give an honest account of what happened. And it was a long day,
yeah,
6 hours or something, and I'm thinking, well, I hope I didn't leave anything out. I know I told the truth. And that was it. And the next thing I got is they were getting close to, you know, maybe getting somewhere with it. And then I got a phone call from my sister. Okay, you can't tell anybody. The documentary that my man is going to go to the Sundance Film Festival. I said, wait a minute. The Sundance Film Festival? That's pretty big shit. What are you talking about? She said, yep, it's got accepted. And I thought, okay, well, whatever. It's in the junk section or whatever. And like, no, it's this and that. I thought, have they done something here that really resonates with somebody? And I began to hear a little bit about it. I said, wait a minute. And I started talking to the guys a little bit about it and saying, okay, they're now, they've got themselves in the right place. And this is going to make a little more noise. Yeah. Difference, you guys. It's going to make a little more noise than you think. because that's you know, they know this world better than I do. So, but it's been fun being, not just being a part of what they're doing, but it's fun to see people having such a good time with something that they created, they made. And for me, I'm just appreciative as a viewer and somebody who's been in the business all my life. I know how hard that is to do.
And I could speak on Kurt's involvement too, which, you know, he's a great storyteller, and you'll see that in the documentary film. And he gave a great interview. But as far as filmmaking, it's almost every filmmaker's dream to have someone come on and give you a great stories and a great interview, but then also just leave you alone and let you do the project that you want to do. And
I'm your man.
I think
there.
That's why it was great. Like,
show up, you know, like Mark, say your lines.
That's really every that's really honestly, it's every filmmaker's dream just to kind of get that, and but then don't get the overreach. And we knew Kurt was never, it's not his personality to overreach at all, you know. But it was a great working relationship.
Well, it's been fun to discovering too, you know, what it was. I mean, it's like, this was their thing. I mean, I just was interested to see what they did. I was getting excited about seeing it. And then I must say, when I sat down last night, it was actually finally going to get a chance to see it. I thought to myself, how are they going to start this thing? Where's this going to start? And I heard my dad's voice before anything came on the screen, and I was just, it was immediately flashed in my brain. That's it. You're on for the ride. You have no idea what's going to happen. I would never have dreamt of starting. And what he was talking about, I'd never heard him say. Suddenly I was in this thing that was just like, what the fuck? Where did they get that? That's true. That's right. So
this actually leads to my next question. I'm curious for the two of you, what was the hardest bit of footage that you needed to get? You know what I mean?
This is a great story. You're in for a good story. Let him tell it.
I definitely want that, but I want you guys to answer. And for you, I'm curious, what was, when you were watching it, what was the, maybe it was that opening line, or what was the footage that really just hit you? You know, that really just punched you and said, what, like, you know.
Which do you want first?
I'll go first, yeah. So our grandfather, we call him Pa, we didn't call him Bing, but he hired a cinematographer, his name is Don Gronquist, who's actually kind of a cult filmmaker up in Portland, made some kind of kitschy horror films in the 80s, and is kind of a well-known kind of offbeat filmmaker up there. But he hired Don to film some footage on the team, and he had a couple really pristine reels of 16mm footage that he shot, and this was great because it was more intimate footage. The rest of our footage was kind of news archival footage from television stations in Portland, and we knew that Don Gronquist has this two reels of just really intimate, unique footage on the team. And about 8 years ago, there was a Maverick reunion dinner, and he gave the footage to Todd Field, who was the filmmaker, and he just said, here, Todd, take the footage. You know,
I can't think of
maybe
anyone
you
else.
Can do something better.
Ooh,
with this.
Did?
Yeah,
did.
Maybe you can. You maybe you can do something with this footage at some point. And this was 8 years ago. Todd, you know, took it back to his home in Maine, and he has a film vault that he threw the film in. So when we first called Todd and talking about the project, he said, "You won't believe this. I have two reels of 16mm footage that no one's ever seen. I'll put them in the mail tomorrow." Tomorrow comes.
Easier said than done.
Okay, well, it wasn't in the one spot I saw. You know, a month later, we follow up. Okay, well, I'm checking my place in Santa Monica now. A year goes by, and I didn't want to bug him too much. I mean, he's a busy man. He's working a lot. And so about a year later, I followed up with again. He's like, all right, I'm really going to look for it. Like, I don't know where it is. And we had heard that the footage was just so great. And finally, about 2 years later, I get an email from Todd, and he said, I found the two reels of footage in my sock drawer in my house back in Maine. He said, it's coming to you tomorrow. He said, strangely enough, he said, the sock drawer is the safest place for that footage. He said, it's my most valuable memorables are in
the
sock drawer.
Safer than any film vault.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, and, so, and when we got the footage, it really helped take the documentary to another level, because it was footage that wasn't just news footage. You know, you felt like you got to maybe know Bing and some of the characters, and it was just a huge asset to our film.
I don't know if it was this footage or not, but it was a moment last night. It was fun to watch my son Wyatt be a part of that last night as well, because he got to see me as a young man.
It was that footage.
Like, I was watching my dad back, having many, many years between when he was a young man. And my son was experiencing the same thing, but he was reading my body language as an athlete. And it was after the game, the championship game, that he didn't win. And he was reading it so correctly. But the footage there, I never saw, I didn't know it was shot, but I remember the moment, and I remember it from the angle of the cameraman. Because that's where our dugout was on that side. But I was never out on the field after the loss. I don't know why, but I remember my dad walking over to the other side to shake their hand and congratulate them. Because it was a big thing in our family. His thing was that it's much easier to be a good loser than it is a good winner. That you must be gracious in losing. So I was watching my dad, you know, be gracious in losing. I was like, okay, he's got to go shake the hand of this guy who stacked the deck so crazy that he couldn't win. But there was something else that was bothering him. And I just remember watching that. That footage was the greatest footage to see. Because when he came back, my brain was doing that. I know what this is. I know where. Here it comes, and I remembered it. But I don't know if I saw it. And when he turns and fires that beer on the wall, that was just. It was so deeply psychologically understandable to me, because I just know my dad so well. and know all the things that were going on in his head. I actually specifically know because there were conversations he and I had. So I know what that was. But it was a display from him that was extremely rare, a public outburst. And he was out in the open to be seen. It was truly a big, it was a big part of him. To get the footage on, to see that footage was really weird because I knew I hadn't seen, I don't remember him doing that. But as it was happening, I knew about a second and a half before I could say, and now he turns and fires the rear on the wall. He's going to lose it here. And that was great footage.
Was there any footage that you couldn't get because of rights issues that you really wanted?
No, we had wonderful lawyers on that we had on our team that we were able to, you know, fair use quite a bit of footage. And we got lucky that we went up to Portland about 2 years ago and just started knocking on these television station doors and told them what we were doing, and just got incredibly lucky that a couple of the general managers at these television stations were huge Portland Maverick fans. And so we actually, a lot of documentary wouldn't have even been possible. A lot of this footage was given to us for free, which is unheard of in documentaries. But I think because it was a family story, because they remembered the Mavericks so fondly, they were just a huge asset and wanting to be a part of it and helping us on our journey.
Yeah. You got some stuff that was on, as you said, on death row, too.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, a couple of the stations that we went to, they're like, oh, you know, you guys are lucky you stopped by. Like, at the end of the first of the year, this was all going to be tossed out or given to another station or, you know, who knows where it was going to be. And it was just so weird to think that had we decided to make this documentary 3 months later, a lot of the great footage that we found and of our grandfather wouldn't even exist anymore, you know? And so I think just from a family level, it's just so cool that we were able to really document that before that's gone forever. And now that we were able to kind of cement it and it's going to last is, I think, one of the real rewarding parts of making a documentary.
The story is just loaded with craziness, and it's all like true. It's not like this Hollywood made up. You know, it's not. You know what I mean?
Right. Absolutely.
It wasn't the Bad News Bears. It was worse. Yeah. It was way different.
What bad?
Well, because people are going to be reading this prior to being able to see the movie. Can you sort of talk about some of the craziness of this team and what went on, and even like the Big League Chew aspect is crazy. You know,
absolutely. I mean, I think some of the bigger names that people know about are Big League Chew, Jim Bouton, who wrote the best-selling sports book of all time, Ball 4 made his comeback after he'd been blacklisted by major leagues. We talked about Todd Field a little bit, who was the fat boy, Kurt, who's an iconic actor, and I remember when I emailed a sound mixer to record sound and I pitched him the story. He says it sounds like one of those like fake Algerian email scams. It's like, how is this all tied together? It's like, there's no way that this is a true story, you know? And I remember thinking, that's what it is. It's like, you tell people and they're like, no way. It's too many random people like who have done so many things. Like, how could they have all been in this one place in this one time in the 70s in Portland? I think that's what makes it a really fun documentary. And it's, you don't know what's going to happen next. And you do get to learn about these people who knew that all these people would converge in this, you know, little town in Portland.
I mean, so. We certainly did. I mean, I think when we first started out, our first motivation was just to find out more. We came across a team photo that was very interesting. It was a team photo of the Portland Mavericks. And it was a team photo that was totally different of baseball team photos that we're used to today, where guys all have their arms folded and they're straight face and they're all clean cut. And these Mavericks were crazy. They're drinking beers, shoes on backwards, there's a dog in the photo. I mean, it just looked like these guys were having so much fun. And our first reaction was just to find out more about what was our grandfather doing here? What was this that he created? And but a few months into research, these characters started coming into play. Jim Bouton, Todd Field, and we knew about Kurt, obviously. But a lot of these very accomplished individuals started coming into the fold. And that's when we realized, like, this is an amazing story that we just have to do.
It was really cool talking to Todd, because I asked him, I said, is this just chance that all these people happened here? And he said, no, it really takes, like, a really unique leader. You know, he's like the light that draws all the moths, you know? And it was really interesting hearing Todd credit our grandfather for this. Just wasn't chance, you know? This happened because there was a man who was incredibly unique and brave and bold and created something that attracted a lot of really interesting individuals.
Yeah, they were. I mean, they did a great job of capturing my dad as to who he was, but they also did a great job of giving you the feeling of what the Mavericks were like. And if you, you know, they did a good job of balancing it so that it wasn't, it was correct. It was correct. There may have been things about those guys that were heavier. There may have been things about some of them that were, you know, lighter, sillier. But in general, every one of the people that was portrayed there at the time was portrayed. In a documentary, you don't portray somebody. You just capture them. And what they captured was the absolute essence of it. What they were. All I can say is that what they had to probably cut must have been very difficult, because there were a thousand stories of things
some
these guys did. You know, just pranks, just crazy shit that you probably just had to just say, it doesn't really move the story. It doesn't move the story. But you could sit there and watch them for probably an hour. Because it's just, no, come on. Right. No.
Well,
you
know, like
they didn't do that. Yeah, they did.
It was like someone told me, like, they used to throw the dog onto the field and stop the game. I thought, oh, that sounds like total bullshit. Like, I bet they didn't do that. What? And then I came across a photo and there's a dog on the field and there's an umpire chasing a dog around the field. I said, holy shit, like, I can't believe that happened. I mean, that just sounds like old men, like, coming up with something that's just like, well, maybe happened in a little bit. And I was like, no, it was.
And they were
there.
Serious about it. You know,
they were serious. I knew at that moment.
Like, you come looking at heavy fines.
Yeah.
And Bing would say, you know, cut that bullshit out with the dog. Yeah. If it doesn't happen tonight in the eighth inning, you're all fine 50. He knew when to pull the string, and he knew he had the guys to do it. The only reason he could do it, though, the only reason he could handle them is because, I will say in all honesty, it would get physical, and he'd mix with you. My dad was a good boxer. He was afraid of very few people. I never saw him afraid. I saw him afraid of a couple of guys, and they were truly, truly rough characters. There were anybody on that team that could fuck with him, and they knew it quick. And he played on their level. And said, is that the way you want to talk? Not a problem. And it was Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid stuff, you know. 1, 2, 3, go, boom. Those are rolled down. Boom. And he was always 5 steps ahead of everybody. So if he wasn't ahead of you mentally, he would be ahead of you physically. So those guys learned real quick. Okay, all right, fair enough. And so whenever he said something that was reprimanding someone, it was on a personal fatherly level. It's like, that's bad behavior. I don't want to see that from you, and here's why. Be a better man. It was always be a better man. And he took guys that I just never could, you know, I just think they were just, you know, I couldn't believe he'd waste the time. They were useless. They were lost causes. And he relished lost causes.
Yeah, absolutely. He never gave up on
them. Never gave up on anybody.
I have to wrap with you, but just real quick, Hollywood has a way of when... how can I say this? Using like when all of a sudden something gains a little heat, or all of a sudden, like, because there's going to be a lot of people that are going to learn this story because of the documentary that might not have ever heard about it.
Right.
And I would imagine after it's been very well received, I would imagine there might be some all of a sudden new interest in possibly
It's really interesting. It's kind of backwards. I've been told by many people, you should make this a movie. I've actually had my agent say, because he's heard Rick Nocito was here. He said over the years, he said, you know, that's a great story. You should. And from when it's part of your life, you just have a tendency to say, "Who cares? It was something that happened. We did it. Who gives? You know, really, honestly, I don't think so." And
well, you mentioned also, at the beginning of this, that you have had a little bit. I wanted to specifically ask you: could you ever see yourself playing your dad?
And so, because of that, I would often think about that, and I get about that far and go, "It's not going to happen. Forget it." And now. I look at that, and then what happened was when I got the word they were going to do a documentary on the Mavericks, I kind of was like, yeah, that's what they should do with the Mavs, is do a documentary. And by the way, on a professional basis, that's the process that should be gone through here. That's the vetting process.
Right.
Do a documentary, and if the documentary is interesting and holds up, then you know what? Yeah, it's sort of like, yeah, you want to play AAA and big league ball now? It resonates with me that way.
Yeah.
This is doing what it should do. It's living the life it should live. At that stage of the game, you know, then you kind of have to kind of go, would I be one of the people that I would be considering to play Bing Russell? I have ups. I have yeses and nos. What I'm what I think is kind of cool is that everybody talks about that. Now, if that happens, and that happens with these guys, then you look, you cross, it's always the same thing. You cross that bridge at that time and start really thinking about it. Until then, it's...
Because it's interesting that, because when I look across from you right now, there's someone that looks like a younger version of you that has acting experience. He delivered a very key one line in a movie.
He did a good job.
He has an old SAG card, which could be implemented.
Yeah. He did, yeah.
And so I'm just saying there could be a family thing.
Get Ron Shelton back.
Yeah. There's a lot of guys, you know, there's it's really interesting that. And since the last 3 days, obviously, for the reasons you asked, started thinking about it more. Maybe we'll be forced to think about it further. I mean, I don't like to say names, but it's a joke. But he shouldn't even say it as a joke, so I won't, because it may turn out to be something that, you know, is a real thing. But there'll be lots of people that I think in my mind, going through my mind, is to play different people. But you can't not think about it. You can't say it's not. And after seeing this, you can't not say it's not.
I think the one thing that's tough about a documentary is it's 5 years condensed to 75 minutes, and there's so many things you can't show. I remember talking on the phone with Kurt maybe a couple weeks ago, and I think you mentioned something about maybe a miniseries or something. And to
me, that was
miniseries is probably the best way to do it, because there's so many characters that stories didn't get told, and to condense 5 years into a 90-page script is really hard. It's really, really difficult to do, and it's really difficult to do for a documentary. And I just think that I personally think a miniseries would be an unbelievable way to tell the Bing and the Maverick story.
I gotta go, and you guys have to do other press. It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time.